Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based grief and loss podcast for Black women, where you will hear stories of miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, and infertility to learn there is a testimony in tragedy. You will learn how to heal, gain clarity, find hope and peace, and turn your pain into your purpose after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee. Welcome to episode 64 of the Sisters in Loss podcast. In today's episode, we have Kiana Wright, who shares her miscarriage, premature birth, and infant loss story due to daycare abuse. We also talk about her inspiration for starting her foundation, Savannah Smiles, and trying again for a family after having her tubes tied. Kiana shares in this episode how her first pregnancy ended in a premature birth of her son Julius. He spent a month in the NICU and came home on a breathing monitor. Later, she conceived and ended up miscarrying at 8 weeks. Kiana and her husband were determined to try again and became pregnant with daughter Savannah after not having a known cause for her previous preterm birth and miscarriage. The doctors placed a cervicage at 21 weeks due to her cervix shortening. Kiana gave birth to her beautiful, healthy baby girl, Savannah, on March 1st, 2015. She knew her family was complete and opted to get her tubes tied in April 2015. On December 4th, 2015, Savannah died at 9 months old due to child abuse while at daycare. This episode is for you to listen to if you've ever had a miscarriage, premature birth, or going through infertility, and really to understand how a couple and a family grieves while going through the legal process of having a child die due to child abuse while at daycare. Here is Kiana Wright. Thank you, Kiana, for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, share with the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, so my name is Kiana Wright, and I currently work in the school system where I live, and I am also the co-owner of Savannah Smiles, LLC.
Awesome. So take us back on your journey to motherhood and tell us about your loss story.
Currently, I'm married and between my husband and I, we have 4 children. One to include our angel baby, Savannah, and we have 3 older children. So my loss story began back in 2013. We had just gotten married in 2012, and so the thought of having another child was like a great idea for us. So without purposefully planning, we set out to conceive. And so in July of 2013, I found out that I was expecting. So needless to say, we were definitely excited, beyond excited. I remember I'm usually really good about tracking my cycle, so I knew I was pregnant within like 4 weeks. So I was really, we were both really excited. And I couldn't even get the words out before my husband started calling and telling everybody. So that's just how excited we were. Within an hour, he was telling everyone. So we went through the process, we're so excited. And I remember around August, I know we went to see the movie The Butler. I was out and I had some stomach cramps, but that wasn't unusual to me for what I thought, because my first pregnancy with my son, I had stomach cramps with him as well early on in the pregnancy. So to me, I thought that was just normal. they were a little more painful than before, but I really just thought it was normal. I remember sitting down in the mall. I was like, oh, I just got to get myself together. And the day went on. And there was, you know, no bleeding or anything. So I figured, hey, everything is fine. And because I had my son at 28 weeks, I remember asking my doctor if she could set me up to get an early sonogram or anything like that, just because I wanted to make sure everything was okay because I had him early at 28 weeks. So I got an appointment with the office to get a sonogram, and I remember going excited, just bubbling over. And the technician is looking, she's kind of, you know, using the wand to go over my stomach, and she's quiet. And I'm not really sure of what I'm looking for on the screen because, again, at this time, our son was 10. So it had been a while before I had even, you know, been in that position to see a sonogram. So I figured, okay, well, it looks like something's on the screen. But she was still very quiet. So it kind of alarmed me. And then she kept positioning me different. And I thought that that was weird. So then she stepped out. She came back in. And then she said, well, you know, how far along do you think you are? She was asking me about when did I have missed my last cycle and those things like that. So I'm giving her information. And then she says, well, you know, did you have any bleeding? I said, no, didn't have any bleeding. She said, what about stomach cramps or anything? And I had initially said no, because by now, this appointment was in late September, early October. So my cramps that I had experienced was back in August. So it wasn't right in my memory. And it took me a minute. And I said, oh, no, I did. I had really bad cramps in August, but that was August. You know, I haven't had anything since then. She said, okay, you said I'm going to call someone else in because I'm not sure if there's still an embryo here. Like, okay. I started to tear up because at this point I felt that nothing's good going to come from this. She's going to come back with bad news. And the doctor came in and she looked as well. And she said that I did have a miscarriage and that it was just a sac. There was no what they called an embryo. So I really tried my best to hold it together because I could have just fallen apart right there in that room. But I got dressed and I couldn't hold it any longer after I got dressed. And the tears were just flowing. And the technician, she had heard me in the bathroom and she had, you know, knocked on the door. She gave me some words of comfort, but it was just a definite shock because of such the excitement that we had with that we were expecting. So I did want a second opinion. So I called another OB that I'm very comfortable with, and she ran my blood work and she confirmed that my blood, Mr. HCG levels, that they were really low. And she said that I did have a miscarriage, but I was confused because I wasn't spotting, the cramps were gone. So I'm really thinking maybe everybody's wrong. And so she said I either had the option to wait until I actually started to bleed and then, you know, come in and they'll have it just take its natural course, or I could opt for a DNC to just go ahead and, I guess in my terms, finish the process. I opted for the DNC, so that was October of 2013. So at this point, I'm on a mission to conceive again because my whole family was devastated. My husband was devastated, the kids, my mom, everybody. So at this point, it's like, that's a goal. Baby, 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 baby. So we were, of course, trying. And in July of 2014, something about July, I found out I was pregnant again. So this time, because of the miscarriage, we just kept it quiet for a while. We kept it quiet, I'll say at least until I was about 2 months. Our family is really close, so it's hard to keep a secret from them. But about 2 months that we had told, and by now, my doctors had already checked and had the sonogram. They were checking everything because of the miscarriage. They wanted to make sure everything was still okay. So I was indeed pregnant and still carrying. So fast forward maybe 16, 18 weeks pregnant, my cervix started to shorten. So they scheduled me for an emergency cerclage at 21 weeks. And so I got the cerclage, which then meant I went on bed rest. because the job I have, I'm, you know, on my feet a lot. So that was the recommendation, to be on bed rest with the cerclage. For me, that was no biggie, because I said, as long as I get my baby here, we're good to go. It was an adjustment with my family, because of course that meant the things that I normally did, I was no longer able to do. I love to cook. That was cut out. Cleaning, that was cut out. All of those things were cut out, and I was actually in the house. I was able to go to doctor's appointments and things like that, but going out for long periods wasn't happening. So we adjusted to that. That in the emergency cerclage included regular doctor's visits that they continue to monitor the cerclage, my cervix, and everything like that. So everything was good to go. At 37 weeks exactly, on March 1st, I gave birth to our rainbow baby, Savannah. And that was 2015. Yeah, so March 1st, 2015. And she came into this world just full of fire. It was like such a joy to have her. My husband and I, we always like to say she was like the cherry on top of our little sundae that we had already created. So she brought so much joy to our house, our family, her older siblings. They were crazy about her. And usually you would think that with older siblings, they would think, we don't have time for a little baby, because our oldest at that time, she was 17. She had just started her freshman year of college. So we thought she wasn't even going to care, but they did. All three of them were so crazy about her. So that was what we were. Every it seemed like it was, if I had to say things were perfect, I would say everything was perfect at that time for us. I went back to work that May. So I had Savannah in March. I went back to work in May and finished out the school year with about 6 weeks left. So I was back home with Savannah for the summer. When the new school year started up, I found a daycare that I was familiar with from one of the schools I had worked at. And she took care of children. So this was a no-brainer for what I thought, because I had seen her with kids. I had seen her working with kids for some years, because I had even taught her daughters at younger ages. So I felt like this was a place that I trusted, that I knew, I was comfortable with, and I didn't worry about leaving Savannah there, or so I thought. So then December 2nd, the day after she turned 9 months old, I get a call from her daycare provider saying that something's wrong with Savannah and she wanted me to come over. I come over, there's an ambulance there. I'm not sure what was going on, what was happening. All I knew was that earlier that week, Savannah had a little cold. So why the ambulance here for that? When I got there in the house, ambulance outside, when I got in the house, Savannah was on the floor and she was not moving. Again, that was December 2nd, 2015. I just ran out with the emergency EMT and got into the ambulance, still not really sure what happened because her daycare provider didn't answer me. Wasn't really too much time to talk because I wanted to get to where they were going so that I could just be with Savannah. We go to Children's National and find out by that evening that Savannah, we were actually at the hospital with Savannah because she had been abused at her daycare. So that is what actually happened to her. And on December 4th, she came off of life support and she actually passed away through blunt force trauma at the hands of her daycare provider.
Wow.
So December 4th, we lost Savannah.
Wow. So we won't go into the other half of, or the next steps of what you all did from a legal perspective, but I really want to talk about your heart, really how you and your husband and your family came together and how your faith in God really was stretched during this time.
That was definitely, I went into a different territory. It was almost like the roles were reversed. I grew up in church. My husband grew up in church, but I will admit that as we became adults, church was not the first place that we always went to, but we knew where our faith lied. We knew where our beliefs were. But physically being in a church, we had not started that until maybe shortly after we got married. But we were there. We knew what our faith in God was. But that day, a lot shifted. I was the one who was always church, 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 God, 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 Bibles, praying, all these things. But when we got in that hospital and I found out what happened, that wasn't where my mind was. But ironically, that's where I found my husband. I found him in the chapel at the hospital. And that was, I could not connect at that point because I'm confused. It was like my mind was not even focused on what I would do in times of struggle or in times of distress. Praying is what I would do. But that day, I was just so confused. I couldn't even begin to open a Bible, to read a Bible verse. But he did. And that's where he stayed those 3 days while we were there in that chapel. But it was a struggle because I always had the thought that when you present your request to God and you pray and you trust in him and you rely on him, that he'll grant the desires of your heart. And I felt that when he sent Savannah our way, that was the desires of my heart, our heart, and she came. You know, the miscarriage was a struggle, but then when she came, I was like, thank you, God. You know, you answered my prayers. So I didn't quite understand how we got to the point there where Savannah had died, but not only did she die, she was taken from us by someone, a choice that someone made. So I could not quite connect at all with that piece with my faith, and I had a hard time trying to even explain it. And it was almost like we were just walking with our heads in the cloud. We would hear people say, oh, this is God's plan. This is going to work out for the good. And I couldn't find out where would I find good in something so horrible. And I felt that if you're saying that this is God's plan, that's not the God that I know. The God that I know, I don't think that he would have someone take Savannah in that manner. If she was sick, okay, or if she, you know, if she passed from something else other than at the hands of someone, then I could probably begin to process maybe God had another plan. But I could not see how the God that I believed in would let this happen. And that was my question that I kept asking. How could you let this happen, God? Where were you? I mean, my prayers were always, literally every night, even before Savannah came, part of my prayers was to ask God to protect my children from hurt, harm, or danger. I don't know how much more specific I could get with that. And Savannah met hurt, harm, and danger unexpectedly. So my question was, where were you? Where did you go? Why didn't you stop this? And that was anger. And it took a long time for the anger to shift. It really took a long time for that to happen.
Wow. So what did you do? What did you and your husband do specifically for you to get over and release that anger?
So we still struggle today. It's definitely still a struggle because we're still in the legal process with that. But I will say that was a base for us. So because we know God, we know what faith we have, it was still there. And funny enough, we have a great support system of family and friends that I would get flooded with text messages of scriptures. It just kept flooding through, and I wouldn't open my text message. I wouldn't open my phone. When I saw that it looked like it was a scripture, I would close it out. But one day I read it. A childhood friend that I had not seen, oh my God, since I was probably 10. She showed up at Savannah's funeral she called me at the hospital. I had not talked to her, like I said, since we were probably middle school. And she called and she just wanted to pray with me. And I didn't want to, but she said, I know you don't want to. She said, but you don't have to say anything. Just listen. And we connected after the funeral, and Every day she woke up, she sent me scriptures. And I just started to read them. I started to open myself up to reading them. And I did not go back to work that the rest of that school year. So I was home. I could not, because I work with children, going back to work did not seem like a safe place emotionally for me. I wasn't ready for that. So when I would get her text message, I started opening up. I would read them and I would copy and paste and I would send it to my husband. He would read it. And then we gradually started having a conversation because it really felt like the scripture she was sending us, the daily devotionals she was sending us, it really seemed like they were talking specifically to us. And it just started us to having a conversation and just really praying that positive, not something positive, but that God would just really step and cover us and just keep our family safe. Because again, we were struggling with our flesh at that time. You know, you don't find many people who will sit and say that they sat and waited for the justice system to work. Mm-hmm. So that was a struggle, but we faced it head on. We're still facing it head on. And just that conversation helped us. And then in February, well, we started going back to church. I'll say after Savannah passed, we were at church every Sunday because we were just looking for some answer mm-hmm. to try to make sense of something that doesn't make sense. And that February at the end of service, my husband grabs our kids' hands and he walks up to the front and he joins church. And I remember I'm looking and I'm following him at this point. It was just like, you know, my husband's going, the kids are going, let me go. I had already been baptized. He had already been baptized, but our kids had not been. But he went, the kids followed, and I followed. I said, this is what we're going to do. And we immersed ourselves in church at that point. And our pastor at that time, he was a new pastor to the church. This is my childhood church that I grew up in. He didn't leave our side from the day we were at the hospital for those days with Savannah. And he supported us beyond belief. Our pastor, he was phenomenal. And he never left our side. And I think he knew. At this point is when I'm starting to see God's work. Because like I said, this was my childhood church. I had not been going to church regularly since probably, I can't even remember to give you a date. But we went, they opened the church to have Savannah's funeral. And he didn't know us. He did not know us. Our pastor did not know us. He knew my mother. And he came to support us because he knew her. And because he knew her, his support through our situation became directly to us. He will call my husband, Julius. He will call me. He would text. He would send scriptures. He really covered us. And I felt that that was God sending someone to physically and visibly step in for us. And that started the process to lean a little more on God and to know that he may not have wanted this to happen, but he definitely was going to cover us and protect us and make it turn out right, if that's the word I can use for getting justice. I'll say that.
Right, right. So let's talk about your new journey that you're on, where you and your husband are about to embark on trying again through IVF. So let's talk about that.
Yes. So we had Savannah in March of 2015. And like I said, she made number four. So we were good. I mean, we felt like we were good. I will say at that point when I had Savannah, by this time I was 35. And I said, okay, well, we're good. We're settled. I'm 35. He's 36. We're okay. So in April of 2015, we decided that I would go ahead and have my tubes tied. I will say, you know how you hear people have this little signs you have that kind of taps you on your shoulder, or little things that happen and you ignore the sign. Mm-hmm. I had a friend that said to me, my best friend actually, she said, you sure you want to tie your tubes? You should probably wait until she's one or something like that. And I said, well, no, I'm good. And I was thinking again with my flesh, you know, again, I had a cerclage, so the intimacy, I would say, with my husband and I was not available at that point. So we had her in March. You know, my mom is like, no, you know, we're going to get things back together. We have She's baby number four. I'm going to go ahead and tie my tubes. And we went out to eat the night before I went in for the surgery. And I remember I was melancholy, but I couldn't put my finger on why. And I remember my husband said, if you don't want to go tomorrow, you don't have to go. And I said, no. I said, I went through all the blood work. I went through the pre-op stuff. I know I have to go. He said, no, you don't. You can just not show up. I said, no, I'm going to go ahead and go. I said, I think I'm just tired. You know, the day's been a long day. No, I'm going to go ahead and go. I'm good. I go. Get my tubes tied middle of April. Who knew that in December of 2015, Savannah would not be with us? So that thought of, oh, we're good, was definitely an understatement. And I got my tubes tied. So again, you know, we're going through life. Everything is fine. And then December, we lost her. So my doctor, she reached out to me, and everyone that we knew was just devastated at the loss of Savannah. But she reached out and she said, I'm going to cover whatever you need for your tubes to be untied. Again, I'm thinking this is God. He's stepping in. He knows what we desire. He knows what our hearts want, and he's trying to fix it. He's trying to let us know, I got you. You're okay. So I go in, have my tubes untied. Now, this is all while we're still now going through the legal process of losing Savannah. And I go and I get my tubes untied. That was a struggle because when I got them tied, it was just an outpatient procedure. But to get them untied, they had to actually cut, which was then an inpatient procedure. So that was something I had not experienced. So the healing from that was very difficult. And so a year later, we were waiting. I got my tubes untied. We were thinking, she said, we can start trying as soon as my incision healed from the surgery. And we were trying. And a year and a few months went by. And then, so I got my tubes untied in July 2016. So a year later, so last July 2017, we realized we had not been pregnant. So she sent me in for a procedure to see how your tubes heal was happening. And they found that I had a lot of scar tissue on my tubes, which was preventing us getting pregnant. So there was another blow. I was confused. It was like God takes one step. In my mind, I'm feeling this is evil trying to take another step. That's where I felt like my struggle was with. Like it was a battle going on, and I couldn't understand it. You sent all these things away, and now the scar tissue. But lo and behold, I found out I have insurance that has a great policy with that. So we started the process of IVF, and we're taking our time with it because of how my body is when I'm pregnant with this, say, of having a cerclage and all those other things. While we're going through the trial process, the legal part of losing Savannah, my husband and I didn't agree that it would be a good idea to be pregnant and trying to do that. So we're just taking our time. We're doing a lot of the pre-work for it, and we're just waiting. You know, we're waiting to close out the portion, the legal portion of that, so that we can then step into this other piece. But I will say I struggle because what does that mean if I bring another baby home? How will I feel? The baby would never replace Savannah, but I just struggle with how does that look? How does it look? How does it feel? Because I would not want to bring another child into our family, and we're steadily trying to compensate for Savannah not being here. You know, that's where I'm struggling with a lot. To make sure that when we do bring this new baby home, I'm gonna speak that into existence, that we're able to know that this is where we should be, and that we see this baby just as our fifth child, and that we would love he or she for who she is, and not because we feel like we're trying to make him or her a replacement for Savannah.
Awesome. Yes, I completely agree.
September is here. Schools are underway. Fall is soon approaching. Crazy, right? October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. This year, for October, the Sisters in Loss community is hosting a Healing and Prayer Online Summit.
guess what? This summit is free, F-R-E-E, for you all, and all you have to do is register. Nightly during October 15th through 19th, 2018, you will hear different experts, speakers, therapists who discuss ways to begin and continue healing from loss with prayer. You will learn about essential oils, journaling, meditation, and manifesting your journey to motherhood. Join us as we are healed and transformed by God's word through prayer during our online summit by registering at ericamcafee.com/summit. That's ericamcafee.com/SUMMIT. Can't wait to see you all there.
Let's talk about Savannah Smiles and what your inspiration was to help other families who have gone through the same kind of trauma and loss that you've experienced.
So I struggled when Savannah first passed with finding support. I knew my son was in counseling. My husband, he was working to get himself together through counseling. Everybody was working on themselves, but I was looking for something specific. I wanted to talk to moms that could relate to what I was feeling, because I felt empty. There were a lot of support groups and a lot of therapists out there that I found that were not comfortable with talking about grief, and let alone grief, but then I was looking for something specific that I could talk to moms who actually lost their child, not necessarily at the hands of child abuse, but that just lost a child, period. I knew a lot of women who lost their children when they were older, but again, a loss is still a loss, but I was really trying to find somebody who could help me make sense of this. And I said, well, maybe if I'm in a group with other women who lost their babies or who lost their children at a young age, I could start to understand what I'm feeling, because my emotions were all over the place. I work in the field of counseling, but that wasn't coming to me. The skills that I have weren't helping me. It was easy to try to help somebody else, but I couldn't process to help myself. And I couldn't find that. I did find a grief company, the Wendt Center, but they focus on just grief in general. That did help me. But again, I'm still looking for that mom group. So my husband has suggested, you do counseling. Why don't you start something? And then from there, I thought, so I can't do that. Because I remember I used to tell everyone that I worked with in my counseling field, you can give me any client, any patient, but don't give me anybody that has to deal with grief. I'm not talking to anybody that has to deal with grief. I never wanted to, because I hadn't finished processing losing my dad when I was pregnant with my son. So I didn't want to talk about grief. But when I lost Savannah, it felt like that's all I did want to talk about. And I needed to find these women that I could talk to, that I could support, that we could talk to each other and help each other heal or encourage each other in your journey of healing and just provide support. Because sometimes all you need is just that person who can say, I understand. I know what you're feeling. And it makes the burden a little easier to bear, that difficult journey a little easier to walk, if you have someone who can truly relate to what you're feeling. And then that's where Savannah Smiles came from, because it was almost a no-brainer that it had her name in it. And the smile that she had was unbelievable. I mean, you would smile just by looking at her. So Savannah Smiles just popped. It was a no-brainer. And that's where it came from. And that's our goal, to help grieving moms who have lost their children or infants, if they lost through pregnancy, if they lost at childbirth, if they had miscarriage, SIDS, any loss that a mother has had, that is our goal with Savannah Smiles, to help those moms heal, to provide encouragement, to provide support, and not just here in our area, wherever we are able to reach, that's what our goal is. So we started out with doing an annual walk in April. We do it, April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. That's crazy. I didn't even know that month existed until I had to deal with that. But we did our second annual walk this past April, and the proceeds from that we used to support moms through healing baskets. We've given donations to other organizations that help with families who have lost their children. And we want to just continue to provide that support. So that's actually the mission with Savannah Smiles and how it came to be.
Awesome. So let's talk about resources that are out there. So you mentioned before that you were really looking for a group that really focused on infant loss and child abuse. Really, what resources that are out there, or what tools or books or things that you've used to help you through your journey?
So the friend that I mentioned that I hadn't seen in years that had just came back into my life that would send me those scriptures and daily devotionals, I had saw it on another friend's Facebook page, and it was a similar, actually the wording was the same. So I asked her, I just assumed that my girlfriend was typing these things and just sending them to me. But when I saw it on someone else's page and they were sending me, I said, where did you get that from? And she said it was a daily devotional, Jesus Calling by Sarah Young. And I said, oh my gosh, I said, those words have touched me. She said, say no more. She was a friend I went to college with. She wasn't even living in my area. She said, say no more. Unbelievably, 2 days later, the book was in my mailbox. So I would read that every day. I actually used to carry it with me because this is how tight I was trying to hold on to God to make sense of this. So I would read that. My pastor's wife, she asked me, had I ever read the book, The Shack? Never heard of it. It's by William Paul Young. I never heard of it. But again, I'm tapping into resources because I hadn't found that grief group, but people are sending me things. So I'm pulling at anything that can just help with healing. So I read the book, The Shack. I had no idea what this book was about until I started reading it. And if you haven't read it, or if you, by now they had have a movie for it. So it was about a family who had lost their child to murder. That was our short story. They were out in the park and the child got kidnapped and the father finds out that she had been murdered. So that book, that wording in it just struck so strong with me. The whole thought of the pain that the family was going through, it just rang with me. Like I could almost think that this was me writing this book, but it wasn't. So that was so helpful to me because, again, this is just something in a book, but I felt like I'm talking to that person that I needed, that I was trying to find to connect, and that person that would say, I understand. The book's not doing anything but letting me know that there's people out here who can help. And it really did help. It really helped a lot. And the time I took off, not going back to work, that helped. And I started to journal. And then when I did get with my therapist, she was not for just moms, but they focused specifically on grief, and that helped me a lot. And that was the guiding force also behind making sure that I had the skills to try to help other women.
Awesome. And I love The Shack. Have you seen the movie?
I did. But you know, funny enough, my whole family went. Me, my husband, the kids, we went. And I was prepared for what I was going to see, but my husband, he didn't read the book. He didn't want to read the book. And I think because he saw some nights, I would actually go to bed crying and I would have to pull myself away from it because it was just so real. But he was willing to go see the movie. He said, I'll wait to see the movie. And it was so agitating. And I think it was because we were watching it as if we were watching ourselves. But we went to the movie theater to see it. So then we're in there, we're watching it with ourselves, and we feel like we're watching ourselves on the screen. But then we have the external factors of everybody in the theater. So we were taking it so personal, and every little sound, every little thing struck a nerve. So it really was not a good idea probably to go to the movie theater to see it. But I was so excited to see it, I couldn't wait. But that was hard for us to go to the movies and watch it because it was difficult. I thought reading the book was much better, but I've watched the movie since then several times and I do love it. I love the book more, but the movie was great. I thought they did a great depiction in that movie.
They did. And I always reference the scene in that movie. For those of you who have not seen the movie, I'm sorry, I'm spoiling it. But I always love the scene in the movie where the kids are playing in heaven. And I just think about my angel babies and your angel babies and your daughter, Savannah. Like, that's what heaven is. They're just running in the field, playing together. And, oh, it just brings tears to my eyes thinking about it because I love that scene in that movie.
That was the part that when I was reading it, I could not finish it. That was the part, and when I saw it in the movie, that was the one piece I waited to see because I wanted to get the visual of how would they put that together. And again, I'm so sorry if we're spoiling this, but that touched me so because like you said, that's all I could envision. And when he saw that, you know, his reaction, it was just like you said, you can imagine your baby just in heaven, just playing. And I rest and believe that she is in heaven and she is fine. She is fine. And it was just, I had a dream not too long ago. It was weird because she, in my dream, she was the age she would be now. She was not 9 months when she left me, but my mom was passing her to me. And she was speaking by now. Of course, you know, at 9 months, she couldn't speak. But she was saying, Mommy, I'm okay. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And that's all in my dream, that's all I kept hearing. And I woke up and then just started crying. But this was just not too long ago. And I took that as her letting me know, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And I was a mess that morning.
So if you all aren't convinced now, you all should go see The Shack or go. I'm sure it's on Netflix or Hulu or on YouTube somewhere. But it is an amazing movie and amazing book. And that's such a great recommendation from your friend to have you pick up that book as well. So what encouraging words can you leave the moms that are out there who have gone through a loss and are in a position now where they're ready to try again?
I would say don't put so much pressure on yourself. And I say that and I'm speaking that to myself as well. I have to remind myself of that a lot. Not to put so much pressure on myself because when you lose a child, you always hear people say you lose a piece of yourself. And it really is like you feel like you lost a piece of yourself. And regardless of how you lost your child, it's still a loss. And the pain is real. And you're not going to just snap back. You may have a good few weeks that you just feel like you're doing great. And then you're falling apart the next week and you might look at yourself like, what happened? Why I was good for the last 3 weeks, but it's no timeline. And I thought that it was. I thought that it was a timeline that eventually you'll be fine. You'll be walking around. You'll be fine. I thought that that's what everybody else expected of me, too, was that I would be fine. You know, give Kiana a few months. She'll be okay. You know, she's still going to be sad, but she'll be fine. I am not that same Kiana I was before. And I don't even know if I'll use the word fine. I'm moving through the process, through the journey. But I've learned to be gentle with myself. And that's what I tell a lot of moms. Just be gentle with yourself and know that you're doing the best you can. If you can get up out of bed and sit up and put 2 feet on the floor, you have made a step. If you're able to get up, get dressed and get out the house, that's another step right there. To go through your day, that's another step. Just take it piece by piece and acknowledge whatever feelings that you're feeling at that time and don't feel like you have to bury them because of what you think other people may be expecting you to do or because of any pressure that you're putting on yourself, because in the end, you're going to push past or push these feelings down that are going to surface again because that's just a natural feeling. This was a baby that you had and they're no longer here. So to acknowledge everything that you're feeling and to be gentle with yourself and know you're doing the best you can. Take it, take each moment as it comes. And if you can't make it, you can't make it. Try it again the next day.
Amen. So where can we find your website and where can we find you online on social?
Okay, I am on Instagram at Savannah Smiles with the S at the end, Savannah Smiles LLC. So again, I'll say that again. That's Savannah's with the S Smile LLC. That's on Instagram. And that's actually my Facebook page as well, Savannah's Smile LLC. So you can find me on Facebook and you can find me on Instagram. And I like to provide positive inspiration for anybody that's following me on those pages.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kiana, for sharing your story, your powerful story, and your light on the podcast. And I can't wait to continue being with you on this journey because we are like sister friends connected forever now.
Absolutely. That's another one of God's movements. You know, when we met up, I never would have expected that to happen, but I am thankful for him placing you in my life and that we are walking this journey together, and I appreciate your support as well.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I pray that this show was inspirational and a blessing to you. For show notes, visit ericaandmcafee.com/podcast. Please join us in our offline discussions and our private Facebook group by going to sistersinloss.com. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, please rate and subscribe to us and leave us a 5-star review. I pray that you all have a blessed week. Keep the faith, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday.